From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
The Commonwealth moves to adapt for the challenges of the future. Ibero-American leaders gather in Cuba. More calls for the removal of sanctions are expected. And parts of the Eastern Caribbean are put on alert for Hurricane Lenny. I'm Jessica Robertson, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Commonwealth heads of government have ended their summit in South Africa with agreement to a fundamental review of the organization's role in the new century. It is designed to make the grouping of 54 countries more effective and relevant to the needs of its 1.8 million citizens. From Durban, the BBC's diplomatic correspondent, James Robbins.
The last Commonwealth gathering of the century agreed the organisation must re-examine itself if it's to gain, not lose, relevance and influence in the next 100 years. The 52 governments represented here in Durban are all democracies now, even if the human rights performance of some of them is still patchy and Pakistan is excluded from meetings after last month's coup. They've decided together that 10 leaders, chaired by their host South Africa's President Thabo Mbeki, should lead the review of the role of the Commonwealth. Britain's Foreign Secretary Robin Cook explained the importance of the review.
The next century is going to be one which you're going to see continuing trends in globalization. You're going to see increasing communication between countries. An organization like the Commonwealth, which is a network of countries around the world, has a real strength and a real advantage there. We want to make sure the Commonwealth takes full advantage of it.
This summit also points the way to raising the standards of good governance and human rights expected of all Commonwealth members. The action group of foreign ministers who police Commonwealth standards will be given greater flexibility to investigate and discipline offending governments. The most urgent task facing the ministerial group is prodding Pakistan towards democracy. The leaders here used blunter language to condemn Pakistan than expected. Fired by their success helping get Nigeria back to democracy earlier this year, they're now urging the immediate release of Nawaz Sharif, the Prime Minister of Pakistan, deposed last month, and speedy progress to elections. The mood of the summit was of an era ending and new challenges which must be faced. It was summed up for many today by the retiring Secretary-General of the Commonwealth, Chief Emeka Anyaoku.
I now see a Commonwealth which can rightly claim to be a community of democracies and a Commonwealth whose hallmark is diversity, tolerance, and understanding in a world too often in thrall of darker forces.
So this summit over, the day-to-day work of all Commonwealth organisations will now come under fresh scrutiny and at the very highest level. Few people doubt the Commonwealth has had a good decade in the 90s, all but eliminating military dictatorship and doing much more to isolate countries which do break the rules. But the challenge now will be to find a way of sharpening Commonwealth performance in all areas to increase the value of membership and to try to ensure the rest of the world has to take notice.
That report by James Robbins. Issues close to the hearts of developing nations, democracy, human rights, poverty and globalization also found their way onto the Commonwealth agenda. Heads signed a declaration which commits members to seeing that globalization meets the central challenges of poverty and development. Host South Africa's Thabo Mbeki.
The issue of poverty is not a matter that you should address by dispensing of aid merely, so that you alleviate poverty, it's less painful. That it is such a fundamental structural fault in the functioning of the world economy that you should seek to wipe it out.
The Commonwealth Summit behind them, many leaders will now focus their attention on the upcoming World Trade Organization meeting in Seattle, Washington. During a question and answer session, Barbados Foreign Minister Billy Miller was asked about making that transition.
Well, this is a matter which engaged the heads at great length. How do we go with speaking as far as we can in the Commonwealth with one voice to the World Trade Organization's ministerial at Seattle at the end of the month? And one head did make the point that the majority of the people of the Commonwealth fall into the category of the poor. We have to be very careful about the WTO, that it is going to be the organization of the early 21st century. It may well even supersede the United Nations in that respect. But we have to be very careful that the World Trade Organization does not become an instrument of oppression and bring a new era of poverty to the developing world.
Pakistan did dominate talks at the Commonwealth Summit, but Jamaica's Prime Minister, PJ Patterson, says he's satisfied that more time was devoted to the consideration of economic issues than has been in the past. He told the BBC's Julian Marshall what is needed to ensure forward movement when focusing on the development of people.
You have to provide the economic framework which helps to make it possible for the lofty ideals of the Commonwealth to be translated into meaningful reality.
What about practical steps that can be taken by members of the Commonwealth, particularly those of the more developed economy, to get that two-way flow of trade that is so necessary to result in economic upliftment for those less developed countries?
From here, we're leaving for the WTO ministerial meeting in Seattle. Commonwealth countries constitute 54 of the total membership of that group. We therefore have some clout, and we believe we can have some impact on the decisions to be taken there.
There are those who look at these Commonwealth summits, you know, they expect results to come out of them. They expect definite targets to have been achieved. Would you say you would actually achieve something at this summit?
We don't expect to see the results overnight. They're going to take some time before they come to fruition. We have decided here on a program of sustained action, of practical cooperation, which I think should vastly improve the contribution of the Commonwealth to the material well-being of the people who belong to this great family of nations.
Jamaica's Prime Minister PJ Patterson speaking to Julian Marshall. Another summit, this one bringing together leaders of Spain, Portugal, and Latin American countries, gets started tomorrow morning in Havana. The visiting dignitaries at the Ibero-American Summit are expected to press for an end to Cold War-era sanctions still imposed by the United States, but also to call for more democracy in Cuba. I asked the BBC's Cuban correspondent, Tom Gibb, what is expected to come out of this gathering.
In concrete terms, not a lot. The official theme is about the Latin American economy and globalization, which is one of the favorite themes of Fidel Castro's speeches. But most of the countries and Cuba don't necessarily see eye to eye on how to run an economy. So I don't think any joint declaration about the economy is going to come out at the end of it. They're going to come out with a declaration very similar to the one they signed last year and the year before on general principles. One of the things they're likely to do is to condemn the U.S. economic embargo against Cuba, and they're also likely to commit themselves to democracy and political pluralism. But that's a pretty wide definition because the Cubans argue that their one-party system is democratic and politically pluralistic, and so fits within that, and so Fidel Castro will sign that same piece of paper.
If they did somehow manage to come to some kind of an agreement, realistically, could the countries involved really influence globalization and its effects to their favor?
I think they're not going to come to some kind of economic agreement. They're not even talking about doing that. I mean, I don't think that realistically they're going to do anything which is going to have a real influence on economic terms. This is a body which is more like the Commonwealth in many ways, which gives countries with some shared cultural heritage a chance to have a get-together every year rather than a hard political and economic alliance.
That was Tom Gibb speaking to me earlier today from Cuba. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. With just a few weeks left in the season, parts of the region are on alert for Hurricane Lenny. The eighth hurricane of the season, with sustained 100-mile-an-hour winds, is moving east-southeast near 10 miles an hour. Lenny passed south of Jamaica. Now residents of Haiti and the Dominican Republic are on alert for torrential rains as it heads on a track that could take it to the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. The National Hurricane Center says the storm could hit those islands sometime Wednesday. Hurricane Lenny is carrying up to 10 inches of rain, which forecasters warn could bring the threat of flooding and deadly mudslides. France has warned that it will firmly express its opposition to European Commission proposals to reform the EU banana import arrangements. The French have upset EU efforts to resolve the banana dispute with Washington because they feel the reforms do not go far enough in safeguarding the interests of EU producers and those of the African, Caribbean, and Pacific grouping. Ken Richards reports that the banana discussions are also causing some upset in the region.
European Commission reforms on the EU banana import arrangements being discussed in Brussels this week aimed at pointing the way forward for the controversial fruit which has divided two great allies, Europe and America. And like other banana developments of the past, it is leaving some confusion within the ranks of banana-producing nations of the Caribbean. Jamaica is one example. The London-based executive director of the Jamaica marketing company, Junior Lodge, is disturbed by the EU move to eventually work towards a tariff-only system and the implications of that for the region. It's a measure that could be reality in 5 years if the EU sticks to its time frame.
We are very much disturbed by being forced to compete with the likes of Ecuador, where the FOB price of a 18-kilo box of bananas is $2.60 in comparison to the $10 received in the Caribbean. We don't think that 5 years is sufficiently a long period to allow us to face up with that level of competition.
Fighting the banana case remains very much on the agenda of the Windward Islands, whose economies depend heavily on bananas. Industry officials and government leaders there are not about to throw in the towel and admit to banana fatigue. But Jamaica's Minister for Commerce and Technology, Philip Polwell, is signaling that maybe it is time to move on.
My interest really is not to focus too much on bananas now, though it is still very important, especially to the Eastern Caribbean countries. My focus as Minister of Technology is to see how we're going to be able to get away from scenarios like this one where you are going to be relying on preferential market access to get into industries where people will be coming to us rather than we going to them.
However, officials like Junior Lodge still believe the banana industry is very vital and are worried by the chess game being played around that product.
We fear that ACP volumes will be reduced, and in fact, that poses a danger for the high-cost producers, which are well known to be the Caribbean.
Junior Lodge ending that report by Ken Richards. The Caribbean Basin Initiative Enhancement Bill, which recently passed through the U.S. Senate, is now awaiting final approval from the U.S. House of Representatives. On Sunday, the bill came up for debate at a panel discussion in New York. Leslie Goff was there and filed this report.
Hosted by a Haitian community group in Brooklyn, an area where many Caribbean people live, the debate pitted supporters of the bill, who argue that it will revitalize Caribbean economies, and opponents who argue that it will be bad for workers both in the region and in the United States. Merrill Smith, executive director of the Haiti Advocacy Group, is a big supporter of the bill.
We're for it because we believe it will bring about increased economic development in the region. It will bring increased employment and jobs that are higher paying than the alternatives that are available to people down there.
Taking the bill to task was Mark Levinson, a trade unionist representing the Union of Needle Trade, Industrial and Textile Employees.
We oppose the bill because we think trade agreements of this kind should have labor rights provisions that would allow workers in Haiti to raise their standard of living so they could form unions. Otherwise, this ends up being boondoggles for American companies. Keep wages low there, transfer jobs from here.
The organizer of the meeting, Haitian-born Steve Copu, said he hadn't decided whether he was for or against the legislation, but was mostly concerned with ensuring that Caribbean people in the United States had a chance to have their say before the bill received final approval.
So far, the Haitian community in Brooklyn has not been very active. What I'm trying to do is to initiate a debate within the community so that all the major views could be represented in the debate and we can hear more about what Haitians want.
Sadly, few Haitians or other Caribbean people turned up at the event, though it took place in Brooklyn, in the very heart of the expatriate community. The BBC Caribbean Report, this is Leslie Goff in New York.
Well, that's it for BBC Caribbean Report. Just a reminder that
this and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.org. www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
Join us at 11.05, 11.15 and 12.10 GMT for our next morning programs. I'm Jessica Robertson saying goodbye from London.